Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, a brand new broadcast week dawns. It's 6 o'clock in the evening, for God's sakes. A brand new broadcast week dawns at the Horn. It is the 20th day of March 2017. Spring has sprung, the vernal equinox is upon us. And it's spring. How do I know it's spring? Because it's all of 60 degrees here in the fabulous Head On Radio Network studios. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, of course, this here first day of spring falls upon a Monday, which means it's a Moran Monday first day of spring. Yay! I had a nice weekend. I'll admit, okay, I mean, nothing particularly special, nothing earth-shattering. It's just that my beloved Mountaineers in the second round of the NCAA tournament played a near-perfect game and thumped Notre Dame. Hey, that almost rhymed, didn't it? Yeah. So they've made it to the round of 16, the Sweet 16, where they will play the Gonzaga Zags. Now, I get, what are they, Bulldogs or something? Yeah. One loss on the regular season to BYU. A very nearly perfect season, all told. And that rolls around on Thursday. I'm crossing my fingers. It'd be nice. But the real pleasure was thumping Notre Dame. Because, I mean, come on, face it. Unless you're a Notre Dame fan, is there any team on earth that doesn't enjoy beating Notre Dame? But that made it a nice weekend for me. And even though a whole bunch, my brackets are not completely busted, but they're in serious trouble. But my final two teams are still in the tournament. So no, I'm not that much of a WVU loyalist. I'm not silly enough to think that they're going to play in the national championship. Actually, and you can call me 17 shades of fool. I've got UNC in Arizona. That's just the way it worked out. But that's what I've got. I would never choose Arizona to play in a football national championship simply because of my undying hatred of Rich Rodriguez and Big Hair Rita. But this is hoops, not, you know. Football. So it was pretty exciting. I'm pretty happy. Oh, let's see. What else? Well, we've got a nice little crowd gathering in the chat room for More In Monday. If you've never been to the chat room, if you have and just need a reminder, the way you get there is to go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and just then sit back and wait for the merriment to unfold before your eyes. Unmasked, it has no choice but to roll at your feet. You'll be greeted by Anatole, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Soapbox Geezer, Steve from Georgia Stan, Texas Betsy, Will in Chicago, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Many machines on X. Some moderating being done as well, of course, by Texas Betsy, because she's a horn chat room moderator. Sorry, didn't mean to leave that out. This is also a listener-supported broadcast. I would be remiss if I did not mention that. And as such, well, we exist solely on listener contributions, which is how we pay all the bills that are occasioned by this little effort at broadcasting. So we try to raise $200 every evening. And we start at $200 this evening. Thank you very, very kindly to our subscribers. And we are we're able to just be at $200, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12.50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13. And we round up the excess from that 0.125 to 0.13. The excess that's left over there goes toward the Gulfstream 5. Right. See how that works? Yes. Let's see. So if you want to help out, go to PayPal. And that will, there you can, if you would like, and we have precisely $15 in subscribers for this day on the calendar, the 20th. If you would like to help out there, then please feel free. Check that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And every month on the same day, they'll take out $5, $10. Mr. Soros, in your case, they'll take out $10,000. Mr. Soros. But anyway, they'll take out the same amount every month, and you will be part of helping us keep all this going and making sure that we don't have devastating shortfalls. Okay? If not, just leave the box unticked and put in whatever number you want. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, well, there we do that too. The mailing address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. That's checks and money orders made payable not to Bob Kincaid, but made payable to The Horn. And let me know, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck, the big red truck. And all he'll have to take with him is his trusty Louisville slugger that masquerades as a walking stick in case he runs into any members of the Klan. Because it's always such a happy sound when Ball Bat strikes Klansman. Okay, so we've gotten all of that taken care of and out of the way. Let's see. It being more in Monday. Hey, where do we go? I got an idea, but let's do this right. Hang on. Let's get all of our little. Let's get all of our little doodads set up and going in the right direction, including this. You know, this.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's More and Monday on the Horn. You will not believe your ears, friends and neighbors, as you wander over from across the Carnival Midway to our little thin cybernetic veil of canvas standing between you and Moranity in its rarest, most shocking form. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Behind this little thin cybernetic veil of canvas, we've got them all for you, friends and neighbors. We've got the Ninthers, the Tenthers, the Deathers, the Birchers, the Booger Eaters. I do love me some Calliope music. We've got them all. Republicans, Trumpanzees, Libertarians, every last form of Moran known to the periodic table of the Morans. You can't tell the Morans much, but this is the program that tries. I certainly blew that, didn't I? Yes, yes, yes. Let's see if we can get this right. For less than 16 cents an hour of programming for a $10 a year subscriber, you get it all. You get it all. Not just Mondays, but Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays as well. Oh, my goodness gracious, it is a festival o' morans here today. Of course, the standard advisory applies if you've got children, small dogs, a kitty cat, a bird, a cockatiel perhaps. Maybe that iguana that you won throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls and one actually went in. Well, friends and neighbors, keep a hand and an eye on all of them, because the morans can get grabby. Yes, indeed, even your European-style messenger bag is subject to being lifted by the morans. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. There we go, and here we go. Oh, my gracious sakes alive. Morans. We got them. We got them in rich abundance. Your nominations, of course, are always welcome as well. So let's just see what direction the whole thing takes us in, shall we? You know, there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue lives the Moran in chief. His name, of course, is Donald J. Trump, but we think of him as the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, the Clementine Caligula, the Tangerine Tiberius, Marcus Aurelius, Comrade Kumquat. Yes, absolutely. And, well, back on the 18th of March, you remember the 18th of March, that would be Saturday, while Jared and Ivanka... were snoozing in on the Sabbath, 9:15 a.m., he found his crappy old Samsung Galaxy S3 phone that probably hasn't been updated since Christ was a corporal in the army of God, or Moses was a major in the army of God, if it did, whatever works for you. But he found his Twitter. And apparently, by virtue of watching Fox News or whomever, he found out that the world was laughing at him again over the business of the business of his meeting with the leader of the free world, Angela Merkel. Because no one even remotely thinks he's the leader of the free world. He is a joke in very dangerous and poor taste. You have, for instance, I trust, seen by now the annotated photograph of him sitting there sort of in a half squat, staring down at his hands, with speech balloons between him and Angela Merkel. First speech balloon from Chancellor Merkel says, "What did I tell you about hiring Nazis?
Not to.
And what did you do?
Hired Nazis."
Yeah. Yeah, we got to get our giggles where we can. And so at 9:15 a.m. on Saturday the 18th, he tweeted, because he's a moron, he's the moron in chief.
"Despite what you've heard from the fake news, I had a great meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Nevertheless, Germany owes vast sums of money to NATO, and the United States must be paid more for the powerful and very expensive defense it provides to Germany, because our defense of Germany is powerful and very expensive."
I guess if we were to parse that like we would diagram a sentence, maybe we would admit that it's
very expensive
to keep American troops quartered on foreign soil. Maybe. But that's about as far as you can go with anything being factual in that tweet. Because in point of fact, well, they're there because after the Second World War, we really felt like Europe couldn't be trusted not to throw itself into another open-air abattoir, seeing as how they'd done it twice before the 20th century was half over. And being as how World War II was really what you'd call
very expensive
and took a lot of
very powerful troops
to help quell, lest we forget, the greatest amount of German ass beating was, of course, doled out by the Russians, kind of the same way we did the biggest part of the Pacific War, which the Russians only got into after it was over, in hopes of maybe getting some concessions, some territory, etc. Maybe it was a cost benefit analysis kind of thing, historically speaking, right? But no, and maybe it's because he's so used to, over the years, having been forced to deal with the mob, Trump, in his real estate dealings for his crappy, tacky, overpriced, nasty-ass buildings and his holdings. Maybe that's why he sees everything as a protection racket. Maybe he thinks if Germany doesn't pay enough money directly to Donald J. Trump, billionaire, then he'll have Ivan and Misha go and put a brick through her window, or bust her kneecaps or something. Right? It doesn't work that way. And consequently, the former U.S. ambassador to NATO jumped into the Twitter discussion. And that would be
Ivo Dalder. Okay? He is the former United States ambassador to NATO, and he started with, one, sorry, Mr. President, that's not how NATO works. The U.S. decides for itself how much it contributes to defending NATO, because it is a treaty organization centered on the philosophical concept that a harm to one is a harm to all. An attack on one is an attack on all. That is how we manage to keep, you know, tanks from rolling across Europe and it turning again into the aforementioned open-air abattoir. So maybe he's threatening to withhold money? With a note coming in from Asa asking, so when does Germany start getting paid back for the entire U.S. fleet fueling up for free on Germany's dime ever since U.S. bases were established over there? Well, yeah. No, because that's not very powerful fuel. Ivo Dalder followed up with, two, this is not a financial transaction where NATO countries pay the U.S. to defend them. It is part of our treaty commitment. That's probably a little too philosophical for the Donald. Three, all NATO countries, including Germany, have committed to spend 2% of GDP on defense by 2024. So far, 5 out of 28 NATO countries do. Four, those who currently don't spend 2% of their GDP on defense are now increasing their defense budgets. That's a good thing. Five, but no funds will be paid to the U.S.
You mean we can't make money off of this? Fuck.
See, that's what we're still struggling. Here, 2 months. I mean, it's the 20th. He was inaugurated on January the 20th. It's 2 months that feel like 20 years. And he's still trying to figure out, and we're still learning just exactly what it was that the Trumpanzees, with their stupid little made-in-China MAGA hats, did to us. Which is another little something that has went running across my brain. And feel free to take issue with me on this. It's okay. I mean, I'm not sensitive about that. But in the wake of the Second World War, particularly in places like France, but also in places like Italy and Germany, there were consequences for the people who openly supported and helped to advance their countries' descent into bloodthirsty fascism. And in that regard, I've been told, I read it
on the internet,
that in the aftermath of the Second World War, it was very hard to find any Nazis in Germany.
Oh no, I was only following orders. Oh, no, I was not active member of the party. No, that was my neighbor.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it's occurred to me that if we ever can wrest our country back, I'm not taking it back, we'll have to wrest it back, W-R-E-S-T. If we can ever wrest it back from the clutches of the ignorant thug-ass fascists, you know, the Trumpanzees, one wonders if there will be any consequences. Or will we just say, well, you know, we just had a difference of opinion. Some of us wanted to go on with our little experiment in liberal democracy.
flawed though it may be. And some of y'all, you know, about, 25-point-something million of you, some of you just wanted to be goddamn goose-stepping fascists. And it made me wonder, in between tournament games, I'm shallow, what do you want? It made me wonder if maybe that's part of this ceaseless seeming effort to normalize and sympathize with Trumpanzees, whom I continue to maintain on this, the 20th day of March, 2017, were actually either Klansmen or neo-Nazis or racists or bigots or xenophobes or misogynists, or knew that that was what was running for office and were okay with it and gladly jumped under the sheets with it. And, you know, there's another example as well. In the aftermath of Watergate, this is a much, much less consequential example, but in the aftermath of Watergate, we saw a disappearance of people who actively supported Richard Pinhead Nixon, as Harry S. Truman called him. And so in the spirit of offering up something hopeful, I ask the question, how will we handle the Trumpanzees if we are ever able to wrest our government from their hands and defeat fascism here on American soil? Hail, fellow well met, all is forgiven. You only wanted to turn us into a racist fascist republic, a fascist dictatorship, a fascist autocracy, a fascist oligarchy. That's okay. We understand. You were stricken by economic insecurity. But we're good now, right? You'll never do that again, right? Right? At least till the next proto-fascist comes along, right? So yeah, I think of things like that. Anyway, back to the former U.S. ambassador to NATO, Ivo Dalder. Five, but no funds will be paid to the U.S. They are meant to increase NATO's overall defense capabilities, given the growing Russian threat. Six, Europe must spend more on defense, but not as a favor or payment to the U.S., but because their security requires it. Seven, he was thorough, former Ambassador Dalder was. U.S. does provide large military commitment to NATO, but this is not a favor to Europe. It is vital for our own security. And maybe it's just a matter that the Trumpanzees don't have a long enough historical memory to recall how many Americans were left their corpses freezing in the snow of late December 1944. Or blown into tiny pieces in the sky as crews of B-17s, B-24s, B-25s, that sort of thing. Maybe they just don't remember that.
But keeping the peace in Europe is a vital U.S. interest, because Americans somehow seem always to wind up, some of us, getting all dead every time Europe decides to turn itself into an open-air abattoir. Stand by a minute. Yes, 9. A strong, united NATO, in which all contribute their fair share to defense, will secure that peace for all alliance members. Sad that this, I mean, we have a president who has to have this explained to him. When's the last time a president had to have, I mean, Jesus God, I know it's the, he's the benchmark for, but we didn't have to explain NATO to George W. Bush. They had to explain barcode scanners to his daddy, but nobody had to explain NATO to either one of them. Jimmy Carter was a dirty commie peacenik. But we didn't have to explain NATO to him. But we've got an asshat who really does have to have NATO explained to him, to the extent that someone has to explain to him that it's not his personal shakedown racket. And why is it that way? Well, you have to have been paying attention to right-wing thought for a few decades in order to understand how we got here. Because, again, Donald Trump does not have any thoughts of his own. He is, to use a Latin phrase, a tabula rasa, upon which is projected the fanciful hopes and paranoid conservative right-wing dreams of his advisors, primary and chief among them being racist Bannon. What the fuck did you do to Haji, racist Bannon? Where's Bandit? And right-wingers have long viewed our treaty alliances, going all the way back to when I was just a little baby redneck and rusted out pickup trucks driving around the roads of Alabama could be seen with bumper stickers saying, "Get us out of the UN!" Well, they're still printing those bumper stickers. Oh, yes, they are. And they say things, and as recently as cranky old Ron Paul running for the nomination in 2012, talking about how we've got American troops, and, you know, the lefty-lefty, uber-lefty says the same thing. You know, we've got troops all over the world. Why didn't we bring them all home? Blah, blah, blah. Never remembering, apparently, that there was a time when we didn't have troops all over the world, and the world was very good at getting itself in horrible, horrible messes. Not that we prevent that, but we add a layer of let's not do that to the whole equation. In regard to my query about once we've wrested our country back from the fascist Trumpansies, what do we do? Brother Deacon Asa says, how do we handle the Trumpansies? Dare I say, put them up against the wall like the French did to the Nazi collaborators? God knows what they'd like to do to, that's what they'd like to do to all liberals. Hell, they have rallies in Phoenix calling for liberal genocide. Yeah, we ran that audio here. Is it a matter of do unto them before they can do unto you? Because if you take things like health care, like Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security into account, they're already working on it without a doubt. Oh, yes. Also, on the subject of dealing with Trumpansies, John says, I may sound cruel, but as far as I'm concerned, let's follow the Roman way, ruin their works and salt the ruins. Cartago delenda est. And see, if in fact this is yet another manifestation of what I've been describing for a number of years as the American Cold Civil War, then at some point in time we're going to need another Reconstruction. And hopefully this time we get it right, instead of chickening out and backing down like we did with the last Reconstruction. Just a little food for thought. Got up early this morning, as is my wont. as a side note, I'm not amazed or anything, but the problem with various and sundry networks still not recognizing DirecTV Now as a bona fide cable provider persists. You know, the March Madness was carried on CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV. And I could only get a 2-hour, or maybe it was a 3-hour, taste, a free trial of TBS, TNT, and True TV, because DirecTV Now is not listed on the approved list of cable providers. Damn it. I mean, it's like DirecTV Now is somehow a redheaded stepchild cable provider. I know. Shut up, Bob. But still, I got up this morning and watched the last hour of Morning Joe. I'm making progress. I now, when they go to their groovy break music, because they at least don't make you watch their commercials. I mean, it's just an endless loop. You know. It gets a little tiresome. I'll click over and catch a little bit of CNN New Day with Chris Cuomo and somebody whose name I can't remember. But anyway, I caught a little bit of Morning Joe. And son of a gun, If I wandered into the tail end of the conversation, and there were a couple of panelists, one of whom was Yamiche Alcindor of the New York Times, or I don't know, maybe she's not in the New York, but she was. I still remember her for the nasty ass little hit piece that she wrote on Bernie Sanders. The one that had him uncomfortably eating fried chicken in a South Carolina church. Never mind. That's just my own ancient grudges. And I hold them.
But they were coming to the end of a discussion, and apparently they're trying really hard at Morning Joe to distance themselves from all that they did, and they did a lot to help elect Donald Trump. And so now there's a lot of pearl clutching, and a lot of hand wringing about whatever shall we do about this awful Trump fellow. And at one point, because this is Moran Monday, at one point, Mika remarked, "Do we have to invoke the 25th Amendment?" The implication being that Donald Trump is crazier than a shithouse rat. My words, not Mika's. And what I found interesting out of the transaction is that immediately her abusive pseudo-spouse, Joe Scarborough, harumphed and changed the topic and dismissed the panelists to go. And I guess this was maybe it was the 8 o'clock hour. Yeah. Or going. Yeah. And dismissed the panelists and went to break. Because apparently Joe is not quite over his man crush on Trump. Now, they say things, Joe will say things about how improper what he's doing is, but they're still locked in this little feedback loop of somehow or another, this is just another presidency. But here's the problem. Even if you give Mika credit, for saying, do we have to invoke the 25th Amendment? There's still a problem. And the problem lies in the fact that we are powerless in regard to the 25th Amendment. Now, you know this because we've been over this ad infinitum. We can't trigger the 25th Amendment. We can't go to the ballot box and say, answer a question, you know, referendum and recall like they got in California and say, you know, is Donald Trump crazier than a shithouse rat? Yes. Yes. Invoke 25th Amendment. No. Make America great again. We can't do that. It's not constitutional. But apparently poor little Mika doesn't know that. Now, this is a woman who has paid probably well in excess of $2 million to sit and pontificate in front of a camera, and she still doesn't know that we can't invoke the 25th Amendment, that it has to be invoked by half of the cabinet, 100% of whom are sycophants to Donald Trump. And it gets even weirder. It turns out, and this is, I mean, this is kind of like nightmarish. If you if you go looking around, you will find an article that I'm hoping will load because I had it all set aside for just this here precise moment. Maybe, maybe not. All right, what's the problem, Houston? Let's
That's not the problem, Houston. Let's just put it this way. It turns out that in every cabinet office, think about it this way. Anybody remember the Denzel Washington, Sean Connery vehicle, Hunt for Red October? Remember how the Soviet submarine had a political officer on it? How the Soviet military had a political officer in every unit to make sure that nobody ran afoul of the philosophical leanings or understandings of Soviet-style communism? And the political officer would report back. Another great example, the movie with Jude Law and Ed Harris and Bob Hoskins, Enemy at the Gates, about Stalingrad. Political officers. Oh, and Jafe Fiennes, brother of Rafe Fiennes. Jafe Fiennes in that film plays a Soviet political officer. And the political officer can drop the dime on just about anybody. Well, the Trump White House, the Trump regime, has decided it is rather fond of that idea. And so every cabinet official in the Trump regime has what is, for all intents and purposes, a political officer stationed within earshot of the secretary. Scott Pruitt, for God's sakes, at the EPA has one. There's one at the DOD looking over the shoulder of old blood and guts, James Mad Dog Mattis. One presumes that there's one looking over Betsy DeVos's shoulder at the Department of Education, although one imagines he's looking over the shoulder at her repeatedly signing her name as Betsy Trump, Betsy Trump, Betsy Trump, Betsy Trump. Not a lot of there with Betsy DeVos, you see. At the Pentagon, in fact, according to the report I'm looking at, they refer to the former Marine officer and fighter pilot who looks over Jim Mattis's shoulder, the commissar. No, really. And that is, in fact, a direct reference to Soviet political officers. And here's the thing. They report not to the secretary, but to the assistant chief of, or a deputy chief of staff, that, you know, one step below Rents Priebus. They're literally little spies making sure that nobody gets out of line. They're at Health and Human Services. They're at NASA. And yes, they all report to Rick Dearborn, Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. And then the advisors, they're called the advisors. They all have a weekly conference call with his aide, John Mashburn. This isn't how previous administrations have operated. Whether the previous administration be Bush or Clinton. Clinton, oh my God!
or Obama, or even, for God's sakes, Nixon. And yes, as the angry Indian reminds me, the Nazis had their political officers too. These creatures monitor cabinet leaders, their higher-up staff, and make sure they're carrying out the president's agenda. I mentioned this in this context precisely for the purpose of reminding us that, as we know, but Mika Brzezinski does not, half of the members of the cabinet are constitutionally required under Amendment 25, Section 4, to trigger any effort to replace a president who becomes obviously unfit for his or her post. Think about that. It was bad enough that they are that they're most all of them sycophants in their own right. But even if somehow they were to be stricken with a with an enervating attack of conscience, these little mole people are hovering over their shoulders like the Fred Flintstone in a devil suit that occasionally showed up on his left shoulder. And you may recall that a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks, who knows, I mentioned that, you know, maybe, just because of that whole duty, honor, country, semper fi stuff, that maybe James Mattis, if he realized that Donald Trump really, really is crazier than a shithouse rat, that he might be the one to go around and say, listen, Betsy, I know you love him. Yes, that is so cute. That is so cute, the way you incorporate those little hearts into your signature. That is adorable, Betsy. But he's nuts, and he's going to get us all killed if we don't remove him from office, Betsy. And wandering over to Sleepy Ben Carson and say, you know, hey, Sleepy, listen, you know how you got that portrait of you and your bestie, Jesus H. Christ, there in your hallway? It's time for you to have a talk with him and sign off on this here statement that says that, you know, Trump's done gone crazy and he's past being fixed by the healing hands of faith. Okay? But we have learned now that even if that eventuality were to come to pass, it is going to become, and come on, look at this. It's got racist Bannon's fingerprints all over it. Trust no one. Spy on everybody. Right? They are bound and determined to destroy this country, and they are doing everything they can to insulate themselves from anybody's ability to stop them. And that is more than a little disturbing, frightening, dare I say, terrifying. And that's just weekend stuff. There's today. And I'm more than open to a discussion about
the Gorsuch hearings or the testimony on Capitol Hill about spying, hacking. Because Comey. Yeah. Yes, in point of fact, the FBI did investigate Trump's claim. And as CNN writes, Comey also delivered an implicit rebuke to President Donald Trump, saying that he had no information to support claims by the president that he was wiretapped on the orders of Barack Obama. Yeah. So that should be enough to get us started, I hope. On this here Moran Monday. It is about 4 minutes before the hour. And I will note that, as I said at the outset of the program, we try to raise $200 every evening. To keep the bills paid. And thus far, an hour into the program, we are at zero. You know, you'll have that. Hopefully it doesn't stay that way for the remainder of the evening. Yes, you know what I'm doing. I'm sitting here pulling up a bumper. Trying to decide whether to go with ironic or obvious or yeah. Well, this seems, yeah, why not? It was cheesy then, it's cheesy now. And it works. So let's take a little break. Conversation radio is what it's all about here. If you would like to participate in same, I welcome you to. You know the number, I trust. Area code 304-663-4676. That's the stress line number. 304-663-HORN. And the other number, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on little old planet Earth that you can get through the firewall or what have you, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. And this here is Conversation Radio. It's the conversation of the resistance. It's the horn. And we'll be back.
Gesicht. Nichtsdestotrotz, ich bin es schon gewohnt, im TV-Funk, da läuft es nicht. Tja, sie war jung, das Herz so rein und weiß, und jede Nacht hat ihren Preis. Sie sagt, to the sweet, you can rap to the heat, ich verstehe, sie ist heiß. Sie sagt, babe, you know, I miss my funky friends, mein Jack und Joe und Jill. Mein Funk-Verständnis, ja, das reicht zur Not, ich überreiß, was sie jetzt will. Ich überleg bei mir, ihr Nasen spricht dafür, wäre das nicht noch Rauch? Sind dir wohl bekannt, ich meine, sie fährt ja U-Bahn auch. Dort singen's
Radine dumm, oh, oh, oh. Schau, schau, der Kommissar geht um, oh, oh.
Er wird sie anschauen und du weißt warum. Die Lebenslust bringt die um.
Alles klar, Herr Kommissar. Did you ever rap that thing, Jack? Is your rap book to the beat?
Wir treffen Jill und Joe und dessen Bruder Hip und auch den Rest der coolen Gang. Sie rappen hin, sie rappen her, dazwischen kratzen's ab die Wand. Dieser Fall ist klar, lieber Herr Kommissar, auch wenn Sie anderer Meinung sind. Den Schnee, auf dem wir alle talwärts fahren, kennt halte jedes Kind, jetzt das Kinderlied.
Radine dumm,
oh, oh, oh. Schau, schau,
der Kommissar geht um,
oh, oh, oh. Und dumm und dieser Frust macht uns stumm.
Radine dumm,
oh, oh. Schau, schau,
der Kommissar geht um,
oh, oh. Wenn er dir anspricht und du weißt warum, sag ihm, dein Leben bricht dir um.
Alles klar, Herr Kommissar.
I had a benefit that you didn't have. I had the added bonus of getting to watch a German guy dance badly. I mean, he dances. Falco danced in 1983 worse than I dance now, and I dance terribly now. I'm just saying that horribly even. Thanks, Will in Chicago, for getting us off to a good start. Glenn with nothing. Wow, Herr Kommissar. Yeah. note coming from Scott and his political officer, Punky the Cockatiel. I'd imagine that the necessary portion of the cabinet would embark upon utilizing the 25th Amendment mechanism to remove Trump, if and when they had evidence he was engaging in a general Jack D. Ripper-like precious bodily fluids moment. Trouble is, how could they even tell when it was happening? That's where I was going even before. It's all one great big Jack D. Ripper presidency, okay? Scott says, throughout the campaign and 2 months into his presidency, Trump's Twitter feed has been chock-a-block full of such things without triggering any kind of useful alarm bells. James says, the good general would have to approach this operation very carefully. Remember von Stauffenberg's Operation Valkyrie? Meat hooks and piano wire. Meanwhile, Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve, writes in, speaking of great morons, as this egotistical idiot dictator wannabe continues to piss the Chinese off, let's not forget that the so-called New Silk Road of railroads that is linking Europe with virtually all of Asia is,
for all intents and purposes, going to constitute the new NATO in terms of economic power and global security. As usual, the conservative nutbags of the fascist state are going to leave a huge fucked-up mess for the next generation to deal with. Even China is willing to shake hands with Germany. So much for peace, prosperity, and new nukes. Regards, Steve, in China. I'd forgotten about the new Silk Road. Yeah, it's gonna be like indoor plumbing. It's gonna be big, really big. So we've got $190 in fundraising to go this evening, and yeah, hopefully we'll knock out a chunk of it again. Thanks to Will in Chicago for getting us started. Let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Tracy, who noted a howling error I just committed. Are you there, Tracy?
Yes, I'm here.
See, I got my submarine movies either half right or half wrong, depending on... you're just lucky I didn't reference Run Silent, Run Deep.
Right, right. But hey, as I pointed out in my email, at least you didn't get the black guys mixed up.
Well, I try not to.
Well, see, I mean, come on. I mean, because when you said Denzel Washington and Sean Connery, I'm like, wait a second.
No, it was Denzel and Gene Hackman in Crimson Tide.
In Crimson Tide, Roll Tide.
Right, and Alec Baldwin and Sean Connery in Red October.
Right. And then it was, see, and there was, a, I'm like, when was there Sean Connery with a black guy? It was Sean Connery and
Stop
Wesley
that,
Snipes.
Wait. There's actually a segment of your brain that's dedicated to when was Sean Connery in a... Yeah, that was Morgan Freeman in Robin Hood.
No! Sean Connery was in a movie with Wesley Snipes.
Yes, he was.
Right. Yes, he was.
Oh, no, that was... Okay, so that was Kevin Costner with Morgan Freeman in Robin Hood.
But you're right, but at the end of Robin Hood, Sean Connery is at the end. He plays Richard the Lionheart, doesn't he?
I don't know.
Now somebody's got to go on Internet Movie Database and Google that, or Google that shit. But I'm pretty sure at the end of the movie, Sean Connery plays Richard the Lionheart.
I'm proud of the fact that I'm confused by the white guys who have acted with black actors. Okay, I mean, this is progress, isn't it? And I haven't confused Samuel L. Jackson with anybody yet, have I?
With anybody yet, right? You haven't confused him with Lawrence Fishburne. And it was nothing alike. Totally different build, totally different color. There's no, nothing about those two.
But knowing how much it pisses, knowing how much it pisses off Samuel L. Jackson, do you think people walk up to him just to say, "Mr. Fishburne, can I have your autograph?"
I think only black people would do that. Only somebody. I can see Kevin Hart doing that just to piss him off because Kevin Hart, you know. But maybe even just because he's Jimmy Kimmel and he thinks he's funny, maybe Jimmy Kimmel might try it, maybe. But, you know, there's only so far white people should and try to go. But, yeah, I'm like, wait, did he? But I had to think.
So I got a question to ask.
Okay.
Since we're being shallow and
on behalf of all black people.
But since we're okay. since we're being shallow and talking about movies,
okay. Well, we have to get off topic every so often, so go for it.
So Agnes and I watched the Tarzan movie.
Oh God!
The one with the Swedish actor.
Right. The long, whatever his name is, the pretty boy.
Oh,
he is pretty.
Yes.
I had to give it to the boy. He is pretty.
Oh, what's his name now? Damn it.
Lars
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no. Okay. You're not stereotyping. He's from Sweden. So you just jumped over to Lars right quick, didn't you?
Cause, well, no, he cause, has a,
Lars was the absent Swedish extraction husband of the Mary Tyler Moore show. See how you are?
Garstet. No, seriously, I'm not saying it because there's a stereotype, because his name is Skarsgård or something like that.
Yeah, Skarsgård. Alexander Skarsgård.
Right.
Alexander Skarsgård. Right. Rhymes with Lars.
See, that's why I got it mixed up. I knew it was a R's.
All right, you've got a trivia question. There's a cowbell riding on this for you.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Sparky wants to know, what movie had Samuel L. Jackson as the president?
Oh, shit. Oh, God. It was with, and I could probably tell you who did it, but I... It's with a white kid, too. Oh, shit. I know the movie. I just can't think of it because it was a horrible movie. And I don't even think he said motherfucker once. I know the movie. It escapes me. What was it, Sparky? Go ahead. I lose a cowbell on it.
Yeah, you're down a cowbell on that. Big Game. Big Game.
Yes. See, that goes to show that all black people don't go see movies just because black people aren't in it.
Although I did, I wish I had it in front of me. It would be fun to go over. I read something earlier, and this is, you know, I'm culturally stunted because I don't go to movies because $12 a ticket. That's why.
Well, that makes sense.
But I read something even without seeing the film. I was laughing. 25, it was like 20 reasons or something, 12 reasons, I don't know. Why the brother should have gotten out sooner in Get Out.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
No.
Okay, let me tell you something. As a black person, I have to see it, and as a white person, you really need to see it, because it was so awesome, Bob. I haven't enjoyed a movie, and maybe it's because
so we got to establish some ground rules here. Is it actually scary, or is it funny?
It's both.
Okay, I can handle that. I don't do movies involving chainsaws.
No. It wasn't Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It wasn't like Friday the 13th slasher movie like that. No. It was laugh out loud funny. Yes.
Okay, it wasn't Texas Black Guy Chainsaw Massacre.
No, God, not even close.
Okay, no. Well, I like I said, I've had the movie spoiled for me. But I can't recall enough of the article to know that it'll probably come to me if we sit down and watch it. But you know, things like any time a black guy gets invited and there's like 24 white people that you've never met before, leave.
Yeah, please. And see, me being, you know, the black, me and Todd and Angry and Sandra being the black voices of the Horn. Are there any other black members? I know that there's a black members of the Horn family.
Lots and lots.
But are we the most vocal?
Todd's not exactly a shrinking violet.
No, that's what I said. I did not say Todd. I said Todd. Didn't I say Todd?
I maybe didn't.
I love how
people get in on the act. I got a note from Scott and Punky. Swedish actor Ingrid Bergman. You people.
No, but so there's been, because I, you know, especially since I spent the better part of my life being the, you know, as my, well, my grandmother used to say, the fly in the buttermilk. Now I refer to it as the Hershey kiss in the cream. I'm used to being the only one, but I've been in those situations where I'm invited somewhere and I'm the only person. But it's a very, and I'm looking around. And a true story, years ago, there was a corn maze that I, you know, around Halloween time, and it was me and a group of white people. And we got lost in the maze. And the first thing that came to mind was every horror movie that I saw, that I have seen, and that I was going to be the one killed. That you know, there was, if anything happened to anybody, it would be me. And here's the funny part. Guess who let us out of the maze? It was me, because I had just taken, I was taking astronomy. And I have your meds. Just the other thing about the North, you know, the North Star, and I followed the North Star out of the maze. I'm like, okay, I'm Harriet Tubman leading a bunch of white.
Follow the drinking gourd, exactly.
The drinking gourd. Don't worry about it, Will. Let's just go. I followed the drinking gourd out of the maze. It was fun. It was fun. But no, Get Out was fun. I haven't laughed that hard at a movie.
So I will put it on the list. So just to backtrack a little bit, yes, and yes, you did say Todd. You did. So Todd has not been left out. Darlene, confirmed that.
If we, because I don't want Todd to call in and say, "What, really? You left me out?" Because yeah. I won't be able to live that down. But no, so let's backtrack. Oh, by the way, did you watch any of the Sunday morning shows yesterday?
No, I can't get network.
Oh, you can't. You can't. So you didn't see Rand Paul.
Oh no! Did we miss a Moran?
You missed a Moran. I kind of slept in yesterday, but you missed a Moran. I woke up to Rand Paul talking about the budget and saying about how the Freedom Party, I guess that's his party, about, you know, saying that. And I can't go back to what I posted on my Facebook page, because he was blathering on about passing out the art of the deal to his people so they can read at the map, you know, because following the master's guidelines about how to entrench themselves on whether or not they're going to, you know, pass the budget or what have you. But he wasn't done with that. It gets even better, because George Stephanopoulos, because after he was watching, listening to him go blather on and on about the budget and how, you know, that, and he asked him, well, do you stand behind Donald Trump's assertion that President Obama wiretapped Donald Trump? And then there was a long pause, but he says, well, he did wiretap Michael Flynn, and so people who do that should go to jail because it should be illegal. And nothing. And I'm like, wait a second. But Michael Flynn committed treason, and the people who should go to jail are the people who leaked the information. So does that get, is that should be, that should be a moron?
Yeah, that's pretty moronic, but. I'm not sure if Randy Paul and that thing on his head might have been. We may have grandfathered him out of the competition.
Yeah, you know, that's true, because it gets to the point where it just becomes what is it, redundant. When you know, we got to get, you know, because we got Betsy DeVos, we got, you know, Ben Carson. When is, how often does it get to the point when they become grandfathered in tomorrow?
Well, let me ask you a question along those lines, Tracy. How paranoid does a regime need to be in order to decide that Sleepy Ben Carson needs to be spied on to make sure that he is sufficiently loyal to Trump.
Wait a minute. They think that Ben Carson isn't loyal?
Yeah, he's got a minder. Reports back to the deputy chief of staff.
He
doesn't report to sleep. Doesn't report to Sleepy Doc.
Wait a minute. They think that Ben Carson isn't loyal enough.
Every member of the cabinet has one. Betsy DeVos has one. Tom Price has one. James Mattis has one. Rexon Tillerson has one.
But Ben Carson doesn't have information.
He's got a political officer too, and that's the question I'm asking: how deeply sunk in the depths of just like meth-induced paranoia do you have to be to think that Sleepy Doc Ben Carson needs a political officer to make sure he stays in line?
That's what scares me about this man. Just the fact that he has gone behind. At first he had doubled down. He has now tripled down. He is not going to let go on the wiretap thing. And I say wiretap with two P's, right?
Yes, I heard both P's.
You said with both T's. There is no shape, form, or fashion. I don't think there's a barometer that can measure the level of paranoia. Is there anything? We're in Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, we are. We absolutely are.
Are we beyond this? Are we in a clockwork orange now?
No, that's just the rest of us having to watch it all with the little things on our eyes.
But the
thing is, as Scott pointed out, how many Dr. Strangelove, Jack D. Ripper moments would we have to, and how would they tell them from just normal everyday Trump? You and I are out here. We look at him and we go, shit house rat crazy. But you've got the normalizers in the for-profit media, and then you've got the people who are around him, and then you've got one of the people that I caught this morning on Morning Joe was actually the congressman that Clarity was talking about the other night. And he was like, well, you know, we're not going to just screw everybody out of their health care. I mean, this is a very careful plan. It's like looking at a house after the foundation's been laid and thinking that's the whole house. There's much more work to do. And I'm thinking, oh, great, they've got more to do.
They got more to do to screw people out of their health care or to start the almost to the NRA, NEA, you know, and all that.
Yeah. And so...
The Moran nomination, or do we have to wait for that idiot that said that, you know, we got the single mother in Detroit that, you know, she's stupid. You know, she doesn't watch. She doesn't need PBS. What asshole was that?
That's Mick Mulvaney of South Carolina, Stan. I mean, what we've got now is a government that, let's say it's 1865. Let's say it's 1865, and the South, after losing the Civil War, was given control of the government.
Kind of like, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of where we are.
Where we are.
Bannon, there is nothing you could tell me about his life, his lifestyle, anything that would shock me.
I'm at the point now where I'm finally leveled on my meds, I think. And I'm actually at the point where I'm beginning to not start. I think I'm almost stopping screaming at the television. like I said, I'm not going to throw things at the TV because I really like my TV and I paid too much money for it. So I'm not going to throw anything at my television, and I'm not going to waste really good wine on throwing my wine glass at my TV because, like I said, I think I'm leveled on my meds now. But it's really hard, Bob, because every single day, it's just these raving lunatics. And like you said, Trump is an idiot. And, you know, most of the stuff that comes down the pipe from him, most of the stuff can be stopped to a certain extent. It's just these other people, like Betsy DeVos with the, you know, no school lunches and just the stuff that comes, you know, because...
God almighty, Tracy, do you realize they cut more out of the EPA budget than even Scott Pruitt wanted cut out of the EPA budget?
That's at what point? And these things don't even come out, like you said, because Trump doesn't think on his own. He has no brain. Because when I think about him, I think of those scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz. And when I think of him, I hear that on a continuous loop if I only had a brain.
Well, it's like me at the grocery store. I very seldom buy Swiss cheese. You know why?
Right.
I don't want to pay for the holes.
Right.
And Trump's brain is more, because of the spirochetes, is more hole than brain.
It's more hole than brain. I would love for somebody, the PET scan?
Oh, you could do it with an MRI. Love. I mean... Hell, you could do it with you could do it with a candle. You hold a lit candle on one side of Trump's head, you blow in the other ear, and the candle goes out.
Right, because there's nothing there. It's vacuum. There's nothing. Sometimes I think there's a wheel with a hamster. There's what I think is...
And the hamster's dead. And the hamster is dead.
And the hamster is dead. Because there's no oxygen moving. There's nothing. It's like what they used to send the canaries down in the mine shafts, right? To see if there is any oxygen. And the canary would die because there's no oxygen. So there's no oxygen going to his brain. It is just the most frightening thing I have ever, like you said earlier, they didn't even have to explain NATO to Bush. And in Daddy Bush's defense, let's just face it, barcodes were kind of new back in the day. When was his reign of error? 92?
Well, 88 to 90, well, 89 to 93.
89. Still, barcodes were still kind of a new thing. Still kind of a new thing, so I'll cut the man some slack. I mean, for God's sakes, he ran the CIA. So Daddy Bush, not an idiot. So I'll cut the man a little bit of slack. You know, not that I'm a Daddy Bush fan. We both know that. So I'll cut him a little slack of not understanding about barcodes.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah, no, I understand. I absolutely do. So let's run back to Shallow for a minute.
Okay, let's do Shallow. I like Shallow. And then I got some more Shallow after that Shallow. I got Happy Shallow.
Oh, wait a minute. I've been awarded a cowbell. Asa awarded me a cowbell for... Asa awarded me a cowbell for... I don't buy Swiss cheese because I don't want to pay for the holes. Same thing with donuts. But it's more obvious with the Swiss cheese.
I can't stand.
Okay, back to Shallow. And Samuel L. Jackson, with whom we will not confuse with Lawrence Fishburne. Right. So I mentioned the Tarzan movie with Alexander Skarsgård, not Ingrid Bergman.
Right. Not Ingrid Bergman.
And so in that movie, which involves a whole bunch of really scary apes, at least at one point.
That only white people can tame.
No, they weren't tameable. No. Samuel L. Jackson is a good guy who rides along on a mission that Tarzan, Lord Greystoke, doesn't really want to go on. He is a reluctant hero, of course. I mean, he's Swedish, for Christ's sakes.
He's not British, but, you know, whatever.
He's British in the movie, but don't get me confused.
Nitpicky, I know.
So Samuel L. Jackson is an American black guy in the 1890s who is some sort of a PhD something or other wealthy guy who's going to be the backup gun to Tarzan in Darkest Africa. Now, that movie did not come out that long ago, and I'm a little worried about Samuel L. Jackson's career. Because now they've got him hunting an even bigger gorilla.
Bigger ape.
In Kong Skull Island.
Like, Sam, really?
Maybe these are the movies you do for the money.
Well, see, you know what?
But apparently he's not.
That's why I'm thinking too.
It looks like he's not a good guy in this one, though. He's the one who wants to. No. We're gonna show this ape that humans are the bestestest.
The wine.
And so the good guy appears to be the British actor Tom Huddleston, who says he's only trying to defend his home. And I'm just a little, I don't know.
I'm concerned. Well, see,
who's his agent?
This is how I feel. There's this time, and I think it is in every actor's life. It's like, there's those things where I'm just gonna get paid.
Well, I've got this vision of his agent in the office of the production office going, didn't you see the Tarzan movie? He looks great in khaki and a bush hat. He looks great with a rifle. By Jove, he does. It's Nimoy with the ears all over again.
Right. And you're getting going to get typecast there, homie. But then again, it's not like there's a lot of movies for brothers. You know what I'm saying? And it's not like he's been, I mean, and Samuel Jackson is a great actor.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Kenneth Branagh make a remake Macbeth or something and let Sam Jackson be Macbeth or...
Do something where he doesn't have to say motherfucker and all that, you know. But my thing is with Sam Jackson,
let him do Richard III and say, I'm tired of these motherfucking twins in this motherfucking tower, okay? I mean, anything.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. But
I'm proud of myself for that one, but I won't get a cowbell. But it was funny. The Shakespeare people are going, oh, most droll, Bob.
Most ever so droll. But my thing is, I'm looking at it on the level of, you know, because I'm not an actor. I actually live in Los Angeles, and I'm not in the movie industry. It happens.
But you've got a treatment, right? I mean, everybody in LA has a treatment.
No, I have nothing. I don't care. I just go. I'm one of those people. I just actually just go to the movie, and even that is on a rare occasion. But I have a cousin. I have a cousin who is in the industry, and basically what he says is, especially for black folks, you can only be so picky. And Samuel Jackson, it's like back in the day, there was either you played, back in the 30s and the 40s, you either played mammies or slaves or this and that and this and that, or you didn't work. And then, 60s and the 70s, you had the blaxploitation movies or you play hookers and pimps or what have you. So, you know, we're just now, but and then you look at movies like, you like finally, you look at like, when, how did, I look at Denzel Washington and how many times he's been nominated for an Oscar, okay?
Yeah.
The two movies that he won an Oscar for, one movie he played a slave, and the next movie, he played a corrupt cop. Halle Berry, she wins the Oscar for playing, she plays a single mother whose husband is on death row, and she basically gets the Oscar for having sex with Billy Bob Thornton.
Well, I mean, I would have given her, like, I think an Oscar is precious little compensation for something like that, but, you know, who the hell am I?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, at least the first character I mentioned, the adventurer character in the Tarzan movie, James tells me that was based on a real person, a very accomplished black man who went to Africa and died in England.
Okay. He's a real character.
Okay, so, but that does not explain the Kong Skull Island. And
no.
Really, isn't there supposed to be at least 25, 30 years between Kong remakes?
How long is the last? Wasn't there one just not that long ago?
Yeah, less than 20 years.
It's been less than 20 years. But back to the black actors. So, you know, Whoopi Goldberg finally gets it. She didn't get an Oscar for Color Purple, which that's the movie she deserved it for. But even then, she plays a downtrodden black woman. What does she get it for? Playing a con woman. So let's see. The movie that Viola Davis finally wins an Oscar for, she gets it for playing a downtrodden black woman. The movie that Denzel Washington really should have gotten his Oscar for was when he played Malcolm X, but no, not going to give it to him for that. He's weak.
Yep.
Can't. So
I understand. No, your thesis is well taken. That sometimes you just, okay. and it's not a black thing or a white thing or an anybody thing. Sometimes you take a role just to get paid.
You got to get, you know, when you get used to a certain way of life, I'm pretty sure.
Speaking of certain way of life, I hit the lottery anytime soon. I've figured out one of the things I'm going to buy.
A taco truck?
That's number two on the list. Morgan Freeman's 43-foot Shannon yacht is for sale in the British Virgin Islands.
How much is he selling it for, Bob?
Oh, it's like 300 and some odd and change. Thousand.
And if you win Lotto, that's not bad. And if I win Lotto, I'll buy it and fly you down. How about that?
Okay, and maybe we'll learn to sail.
Yeah, well, or better yet, we'll just hire somebody to sell it for us. How about that?
Exactly. And the proceeds go to one of his favorite charities.
Oh, really? And what is his favorite charity? One of them. Does it really matter?
And so I'm trying to think what he named his boat. It's Aphrodisia. Aphrodesia. Because,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's the perfect segue to my other shallow part. Well, there's two. Well, one is not shallow, but the second part is shallow. So last Thursday, how are you feeling, by the way?
Terrible, thanks.
Oh, Jesus. So last Thursday when we were speaking, when we last spoke, I was on my way to weigh in at Weight Watchers. So I am now down 31 pounds. So that's not shallow part, but that's I'm down 31 pounds.
Beautiful.
I have lost since December 31 pounds. And, you know, while you were watching your beloved Mountaineers kick Notre Dame's ass, yay.
And that was sweet.
I was down. I know. Did you get to watch the game or no?
Oh, yeah, I did. I watched on the March Madness app.
Okay. Cool. So while you were watching your Mountaineers kick the tar out of Notre Dame, I was down in Sydney at Harris picking up my cruise. So Jan and I are going on our second cruise together. We are flying, and we're going to be flying to San Juan, Puerto Rico. And from there, we're going to be going to Barbados, St. Martin, St. Kitts. Where else are we going? St. Martin, St. Kitts, Barbados, St. Thomas, and Martinique. And that's in December of this year.
That will be very nice.
That is my shadow.
And if you hit the lottery, you can buy the boat because it's in the British Virgin Islands.
Yes.
And you can get somebody to sail it home for you through the Panama Canal, up the Mexican coast,
right,
and just, you know, park it at Santa Monica.
Or I could just leave it there.
Yeah, and go and I'm told the docking fees will be murder.
Where is that? Yeah, in Santa Monica, but probably not in St. Thomas. It's probably cheaper to leave it there.
Well, the docking fees will be murder in the British Virgin Islands, too.
Oh, really? So, well, if I win the lottery, what difference does it make?
Well, see, that's the thing. And yes, follow up, so what they did with the Tarzan story is they apparently merged the real-life story of George Washington Williams into the Tarzan story, because George Washington Williams, James provided me the wiki on it, went to the Congo, was appalled by what he saw, and wrote a letter back to King Leopold II of Belgium, telling him what a human rights disaster it was. Because had it not been for Adolf Hitler, we would probably remember Leopold II of Belgium as one of the greatest practitioners of genocide this side of Andrew Jackson.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing, you know, what people do in the name of progress?
Well, in the name progress, my ass, in the name of money.
In the name of money.
But before you go, I have to give you an Aryan Barbie update. Because I know how much Tommy Lauren means to you.
We were having such a nice conversation, Bob.
Oh, no, but you're going to love this. This is a beautiful con. I mean, and you know, this is one of those things. This is one of those things that you look at and you go, man, somebody is playing, you know, Glenn Beck and the networks like a fiddle. So.
Ooh. Okay.
So, Miss Aggrieved White Privilege 2017, Aryan Barbie, Tommy Lauren. Well, it turns out her contract is up in September. And she's become rather a hot property. And that's not being sexist. I'm talking about, you know, she has media value. And so she went on she didn't want to go to Fox.
Really?
I don't think so. She has famously in the past screamed that women who have abortions are murderers.
Ooh, don't tell me she's had an abortion.
No, they invited her onto The View this past Friday.
Was she on The View on Friday?
Uh-huh.
Was
she
Whoopi
said,
on there too?
And she said, no, Whoopi wasn't there. Otherwise, Whoopi would have had her for lunch, I think. I can't sit here and be
but
a hypocrite. I can't sit here and be a hypocrite and say I'm for limited government, but I think the government shouldn't decide what women do with their bodies. Stay out of my guns, and you can stay out of my body as well. Well, she has now been suspended from the Blaze and her broadcast for at least 1 week for saying that women should have the right to make decisions about the workings of their own body.
Oh, you know what? See, because I told you that Jan watches The View, and because I heard Jedediah, that see you next Tuesday.
Yes.
I think you understand that I don't like her.
Yes.
And she...
Her parents wanted a boy.
Apparently they wanted a boy. And so I kind of heard something about limited government and such, so that's what she was...
I had that clip, too, and Jedediah Bila blithered and blathered on about limited government. And that's just one of those phrases that I hear it now, and it has no meaning. All it means is that there's a right winger there, and they want more for whoever it is they care about, and less for what they don't.
Right. If you ever make it out to L.A. and you're at my house, the funniest thing in the world is when Jan is watching The View and Jedediah starts to speak and Jan's reaction. Now, you think I'm bad? My wife?
Mm.
And, and see, my wife will say what I
can
just
she, can she nicely. Can Jan swear multidimensionally? Okay.
Yes, it's actually amazing. It actually can singe your ears.
She's a third stage guild navigator of cussing.
Yes. It reminds me of what was a Christmas story?
Where there are still swear words in the circling the earth in the above the atmosphere. Yeah.
Yes, that's. Basically, that's my
And
life.
So Jedediah Bila so does that to Jan.
Jedediah Bila does that to my wife. And, she's like, she's handled, what's her name, she's handled other right-wingers on the show okay. But the her, because she, the bottom line is because she's so self-righteous. And she just, I don't even think I think she claims to be a libertarian.
Well, yeah, she's a Republican who wants to smoke a lot of dope.
That's all. And because that's what, that's all libertarians are. They're just Republican that wants to smoke weed. You know what I'm saying? So it is what it is. But I know you have to go. Are you cutting the show short? It doesn't matter because I know you need to go. But I hope you start feeling better because this is concerning to me. When is your next doctor's appointment?
Well, it was today. It was today.
And what happened? It was, did you go?
Yeah.
And?
Well, he didn't show, and then they said he doesn't want to see you anyway.
Say what? Wait, how does that, huh? Wait, what? How does that, the doctors.
We know that I'm insured, but what I was insured by that I'm trying to get back, I'm not in his network, or he's not in mine.
So now you got to find another. So, but the good news is that you are insured.
No, I'm not.
You're not insured.
No.
Okay.
And the thing is. What I got was, well, I don't know if they're, they might be in network over at WVU Surgeon's Clinic. But what it boils down to, is, and this is kind of frightening, what I've got going on is nothing that there's anybody in West Virginia who can handle. And that's a little terrifying. And a lot painful. And possibly terminal.
And see, this is why knowing people like you in these vast, as much as you, I know you love your state.
I just want to make, before anybody makes any, no, I'm not terminal.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter, is,
clarify that.
If I was, if I had the coverage that I had before, it still would not pay for me to get treated outside the state of West Virginia, where they treat enough people to know what the hell to do with me. I've done my homework. I know, for instance, that in issues regarding the pancreas, the rates of mortality and morbidity go down dramatically in healthcare facilities that see at least 180 cases a year. That's one every other day, if you count Saturdays and Sundays.
And where would you, in what states would that be?
Number one, the number one clinic for that sort of thing is Mayo in Rochester, Minnesota. Number two is Cleveland Clinic, obviously in Cleveland, Tennessee. No, Cleveland, Ohio. And number three is Johns Hopkins. After that, oh, God, I might even still have the list. Give me a second here. No, I do not. But the thing is, it's not just pancreas. It's everything about my innards. It's the fact that there's a birth defect screwing with a whole lot of stuff. And I'll be honest, Agnes and I went down there. You ever walked into a doctor's office and just got a really, really bad feeling?
Fortunately, no.
I am not kidding when I say, and you know, maybe this is just how it goes. But this is a 65-year-old surgeon. No ageism going on here. But the furniture in his waiting room was at best from the LBJ administration. There were prints about the history of medicine hanging in frames on the wall that had water stains under the glass and had to be at least 40 years old.
And then Agnes went to
the restroom, and when we were in the car, she said, "I don't care if they wanted to, I wouldn't let you." She said there were surgical instruments sitting in a sink outside the restroom.
Wait, surgical instruments in the sink outside the restroom?
Yeah.
Oh. No.
Like maybe where some sutures had been removed or something?
Oh.
And he never showed up because he was in surgery.
And this is the state of healthcare. I mean, and not to say that there aren't doctors like that in California.
The reason they sent me to him is because he's the most highly regarded surgeon in the Kanawha Valley. And at one point I looked and I
was highly regarded by who?
Oh, I guess by the medical community. At one point I looked and I looked to the assistant and I said, well, how many pancreases has he done? And she said, oh, I think he's got about 10 or so that he's taking care of right now. Now, you remember the number I gave you a few minutes ago?
Right.
You need a facility that's dealt with 180 a year. But it's not just pancreas, it's pancreas and spleen. It's not just pancreas and spleen, it's pancreas and spleen and malrotated bowel and screwed up small intestine that's all stuck over on my right side laying on my liver.
So you basically feel like every day like you just been gut punched every day. Literally.
No, because that goes away.
Right. I feel, I mean, the other day I was thinking about you because I told you my appetite is just, is slowly coming back. Yesterday, Jen and I were wandering because I have to start doing menus again because now my appetite is coming back. So we're in, Ralph's, trying to figure out what we're going to do for dinner, and we were gone for the weekend. And so I'm like, oh. So I wonder if they have, and they just so happened that they still have corned beef left over from, St. Patrick's Day. So I made corned beef and cabbage, which was pretty tasty. I didn't really eat that much of it. It was just something, sort of quick because it takes almost like 50 minutes per pound, and we got a 4-pound, brisket. But it was, it's pretty effortless. You throw the damn thing in the pot, let it cook. You throw in the potatoes and the carrots, and you throw in the cabbage. Not a whole lot of effort. But I was thinking about you the other day, and I was like, I wonder how Bob was still, was doing, because last time I talked to you, you weren't doing well, and you're still not doing well, and it troubles and worries me that, because every time why you're always on my mind is every time I hear some idiot talk about, how we don't, some cuts to Medicare or Medicaid or whatever, whatever, the healthcare expansion, Medicaid expansion, the first thing that pops in my mind is you and anybody else that I love and care about, and my son, because he's under the same, he's going under the same thing that you're going under. Because even though we're sort of safe in California, unless we vote in single payer out here, we're under the whims of this, asshole as well. No one.
Yeah, the only state that is and that is marginally safe is Massachusetts.
Massachusetts?
Yeah. Because Trump can't destroy Romney Care. How's that for some fucking irony?
Isn't that the irony in that is just amazing. I had a death in the family. My cousin passed away from NOLIS. She died of cirrhosis of the liver. Come to find out, it's amazing what you find out when people... I just saw her in November. Another friend of the family passed away from pancreatic cancer. Great. So was at her funeral and just saw my cousin. She looked fine. I had no idea that she was her husband moved her and her son out to Nevada, but he stayed out here to work. So basically she drank herself to death. But here's the kicker. She got sick and wound up in the hospital. But you know what she died up in the hospital? God, yes. Not from the cirrhosis. It was from sepsis.
Yeah. Something she got in the hospital.
So then she got in the hospital. But here's the kicker. The funeral was Saturday. I couldn't make it to the funeral because, you know, I was in San Diego. I got to the repast. I don't like funerals anyway. But anyhow, her husband, this is the man that she's been married to for, I think, like, you know, 14, 15 years or whatever. He was an hour late to her funeral.
Jesus.
So, really, this, Batman, how are you an hour late to your wife's funeral? I tell you why he was probably an hour late to her funeral. Did I mention that my cousin was the youngest of five and the only girl? And her brothers pretty much are, like, you know, linebackers. And all four of them hate him.
Ah. Slow walked it to the funeral, did he?
Yeah. I think he was actually kind of hoping that they would probably start the funeral without him. But not so much. So, yeah. So that was my... So I had a good weekend and then a bad weekend. But the one good thing about funerals is the fact that you get to see people that you haven't seen in a while. And even, you know, and it brings families together, you know, at least for the time being. For whatever the reason, seems to dissolve, at least for that week. And then it's kind of, you know, hope that the mend fixes for a little while. And then it comes back. But at least for a little while, things are kind of okay, you know. But then it comes back. But at least for a little while, things are good. But I you know, and I'm going to leave you on that note. But I have, let's see, what's today? Today is Moran Monday. What a cool name for a $25 challenge for Moran. Something about my crew. Let's try to work in my crew, Moran. Come on, you're the.
Well, I was just thinking about springing away from the Morans on Moran Monday, first day of spring.
Okay, there you go.
All right, so $20. Okay. Thank you very, very kindly, Tracy.
No,
$25. Okay. And that will help immensely because Glenn and Glenn and Keith jumped in alongside Will. So we're at 170. So if somebody meets your $25 challenge, we'll be down to 120.
Nice.
So thank you, Tracy. Thank you very kind. And, you know, I'll keep folks posted on this. It's just, you know, it's just kind of, you know, I mean, there's not a lot to say.
I know you're not. I know you're not a praying man, but I'm a. But wait, before I go, did you like how I signed my email?
Yes, I did. That was lovely.
for you guys, about the
yeah, signed sorry, love, guys. Signed love, the Grand Negress, Tracy.
I think I should use that as a Twitter handle. I don't know. I think that's pretty awesome.
I think it is.
The Grand. I think that's. I wonder if somebody has it. But the Grand Negress. Oh my God.
Maybe make it even awesomer and make it ye grand and put an E behind grand ye grandy.
Ye grandi negress. Oh.
Forsooth.
Forsooth. Ye grandi negress. Oh, my God. Ye grand. Oh, my God. This sounds like something that would be out of a Star Trek episode. Oh, my God. Wasn't that a Star Trek episode? You horror negress?
Well, I mean, you know, Whoopi was all the time popping up in Next Generation.
No, but there was something. What was I watching? Oh, I saw something. Somebody called a black character, a black female, and it wasn't. They called her. Oh, I got. It's gonna kill me. I'm gonna have to find it. But anyway, I'm gonna go. But 25-hour challenge, whatever you called it. Please, please try to get better. If I had to do a GoFundMe page so you go to the Mayo Clinic or wherever the hell you have to go to get better, because this is why we need single parent right here, you, right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I mean, and not to jump out and try to be a poster child or anything, but so now on top of everything else, I got to figure out how to get my happy ass to Cleveland. I mean, that's the closest place.
How far is Cleveland from you?
5.5-6 hours driving.
That's not terrible, is it?
Mayo is number one with a 100 out of 100 overall score, according to U.S. News, 5 out of 5 safety score, and 147 doctors in specialty. Cleveland is number two at an 89.1 out of 100 overall score, 5 out of 5 safety score, and 74 doctors in specialty. But where it gets interesting, and this is one of those things that's sort of real world makes me crazy, Tracy. You know when you hear right-wingers talking about health care, and they talk about how we're going to have consumer choices?
Right.
Like the doctor's going to post splenectomy on his door, and you'll stand there and look at, you know, honey, we can't afford the splenectomy today. What do you say we go for an appendectomy and save money for the splenectomy? Oh, but wait, over here's Dr. Right. Thumbfingers, and he's got 15% off splenectomies this week. You know, that is such a load of goddamn bullshit. Because the fact of the matter is, if you look at them and go, how much is this going to cost? They right. go, oh, no.
And that's another thing that Rand Paul was, that was what he was, that was my, what, well, thank you for saying about that. That was what woke me up, because he was talking about the damn block grant.
Oh, no, that just, I mean, that makes me want to run rabbits, because the fact of the matter is, one of the problems with our healthcare system is the fact that we've got multiple payers, and so, I mean, just Medicaid will pay this much, and ask any healthcare provider, and I'm not going to argue with them over it. They say that Medicaid undercompensates. So Medicaid has a schedule of what yeah. they'll pay for various procedures. And that's all they're paying.
Period.
And then let's say you've got a policy through Great Big Health Insurance Corporation of America, and they've got a different schedule of what they'll pay. And it's usually a little higher than Medicaid. There's another schedule entirely for Medicare. Now, we're talking about the same damn procedure. Okay? And then there's the Monumental Healthcare Insurance Corporation of America, and they got another schedule, because they all individually negotiate what they'll pay for a given procedure. And then there's this other category called private pay.
Right.
Which means you're just self-insured and you're doing it yourself. You're just gonna, you're JT Gottrocks, and you're gonna just write him a big fat check as soon as it's over, or preferably get the money up front in case they kill you.
Right.
And guess what? The private pay charge is orders of magnitude higher than any negotiated billing through any insurer. Because the hospital and all the providers know that they can clip your ass, because you have no negotiating power at all. And odds are, I mean, you know, so, you know, there you are with acute appendicitis and your private pay, and you're going to go from hospital to hospital trying to find out where you're right. going to get the best rate, you know, while your appendix is bursting inside your belly.
Well,
I mean, there's just, like it's such,
your prescription.
It's so goddamn dumb, Tracy.
It's like with your prescriptions. Are you going to go from Rite Aid to say to what's this not Saline anymore to whatever it is. Now,
CVS, to, Walgreens, to CVS, Kroger's, Costco, Wally World.
Wally World to where. To Target, to whatever. I just want my prescription filled. You know, I don't have.
Yeah, but even that is rife with bullshit. Because let's say you want to get your prescription filled at Wally World, and you do ask them how much are 30 blood pressure pills going to be, and they tell you $15. You know, generic, it's on the list. Well, let's say then you go across to CVS and you say 30 blood pressure pills and they go $25. Well, they will not tell you from behind the counter, but if you look at them and say Walmart's got it at 15, then they'll price match it. But they won't tell you they'll price match up front.
Nope.
And that's real world in a number. I mean, I'm sure maybe there are some who advertise it, but there are others who damned well, I know for a fact, do not.
And I see, until you told me that, I didn't know that. For me, it depends on my insurance. It's like, well, it costs this much, and sometimes it's more. If I don't go through my insurance, it's less. If I don't go through my insurance, it's less money than if I go through my insurance. It's just like, wait a minute. So you're telling me if I use my insurance, it's going to cost me more money. So you're telling me you're ripping off my insurance company, right? But then to find out how much stuff costs, like my there was a break in my insurance for a minute. My my Latuda is like $300 without insurance. What? Why does medication cost that much? Why would anything cost that much money just to make sure I don't?
Well, because they can. Because they can. Because remember back during the Bush administration
I want to put my foot up his ass for pussying out on a bill that we could so we could buy our drugs from Canada. Punk ass motherfucker.
Yeah, but why do we even have to jump through that hoop? See, the problem lies in the fact, and this happened back during the reign of error of Bush. The Democrats tried to get a bill through that would allow the government to negotiate cheaper drug prices. And the Republicans hollered, oh, fuck no, what about Ayn Rand? What about capitalism? What about the free fucking market? Well, see, Canada does that. The UK does that. Germany does that. I mean, you talk about drugs being one price one place and another price another place. When that skinny jeans wearing little Belgian prick stole my backpack in Brussels 5 years ago, he stole all my meds. So we had to go and replace my meds.
Right.
And so we went to the Doc in a Box.
He said Doc.
And there was a Porsche parked behind it. Doctors aren't going broke in Germany. And there were only two or three of us in there. So we get in and I explained to him, he speaks very good English and I spoke very bad German. So we settled on English and I told him all my meds. He fed them into the, he typed them into the computer and he said, okay, here's a list of the, and I'm writing you a prescription. And this is how much they're going to cost. I said, here? And he said, no, anywhere. Anywhere in Germany. This is how much the drugs are going to cost. And I kind of sat there like an idiot American with my mouth hanging open catching flies. But the drug was the same price. It didn't matter where I went, whether I stayed in Frankfurt or went to Berlin or got them in Munich. Didn't matter. Because the drug companies are not allowed to just rip off the German people because they can. Here, that is exactly what the drug companies are allowed to do. Witness my senator, Joe Manchin's daughter, Heather Bresch at Mylan and her $600 goddamn EpiPen.
I wonder how much an EpiPen costs in Europe.
I don't know. Probably about $50. So, so there's that.
How much were the drugs? How much did it cost you?
Oh, I think for all of them, it was like $40.
And how much would that cost you here?
Well over 100. Way over 100 when you take a couple of them into account.
When my mom, and she went to Italy, and she got sick. She got a bladder infection or something. And they just went to the doctor. Everything was included, was like, you know, to see the doctor and to get her meds or whatever, like $40 or something like that. In and out, you know. The labs and all that, done. And that's including, you know, the antibiotics and all that. Done. Yeah. And, you know, here you can't, again, it's just because, like you said, freedom.
Well, no, because money is more important than people's lives.
More important. It's like that, you know, what I wrote the other day about the budget and how, you know, with the, you know, like you were talking about all the things that they were cutting, the PBS. Well, forget about PBS and stuff, which I don't want to forget about. But just the fact that they're cutting the lunch programs, ETA, the programs that if you don't have the money to pay, you know, if you need money to help pay for your gas bill or your heating bill, they're cutting that and all that, but yet and still, they're raising the defense budget by $64 billion, and we're protecting melanoma and their child for how much are we paying?
Oh God,
$30 million.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, crazy numbers.
You know, $30 million because
something like $60,000. Something like $60,000. For the added NYPD police presence alone outside that tacky-ass mm-hmm. pile of bricks or stack of concrete or whatever you want to call it.
And then there's what
he's doing to Palm Beach, Florida.
Right, the traffic congestion and all that sort of stuff because, you know, he's going on vacation every fucking weekend. But we don't have any money to feed kids, you know, because let's face it, you know, like I said the other day, when I was growing up, we were so broke. Sometimes that breakfast and that lunch was like the only meal that I would have sometimes.
Yep.
But, you know, it doesn't. What did that asshole say? It doesn't show.
No demonstrable results.
No demonstrable results. I have a child being able to pay attention in school and learn something because they're not hungry. That's not a demonstrable result.
Well, but the thing is, there aren't children laying dead of starvation outside of schools, so therefore it must not be necessary. You have to understand how goddamn soulless Republicans think.
And then again, like you said the other day, what you do to the least of your brothers and sisters, you also do to me. And I posted that on my Facebook page the other day. What you're doing to these people, and you call yourself Christians, you're doing it to Jesus. This is Matthew. What was that? Matthew 25, motherfuckers. You're doing this shit to Jesus. What you're doing to the least of us, and you're calling, I know you're not a Bible banger, but the fact that you can't go to the doctor, You're counted as the least of us, Bob. You know, people who can't go to the doctor, people who can't feed their families, people who won't be able to, you know, we're going to the spring and now and soon into the summer. But pretty soon we'll be back into the fall, into the winter, and it's going to be cold as a motherfucker. And guess what's going to happen? They're going to want to be able to turn on the heat, and they're not going to be able to do that because, bye, they're not going to have the money. And, oh, and like I just saw the other day, what, JCPenney's are closing how many stores?
Yeah.
So that's tomorrow, people.
Well, hell, there's 2,000 there's 2,000 or more people, I think I read, going to be out of a job at EPA.
Right. And then how many people are going to lose? There's like 100 and some odd jobs, 100 and some odd Penny's closing. And, of course, the hardest hit are going to be down south in the Midwest.
Yep. And it will be, and it will be all whose fault?
At this point, it's probably going to be my fault because I'm a Democrat and black.
No. I mean, we're talking. This is going to hit people in the Midwest. It's going to hit people in Trump America, and therefore, mm-hmm. whatever bad happens to them will be
Obama's fault.
Bingo.
It will be Obama's fault. Somehow, it will be Obama's fault. Well, that's what I said, because I'm a Democrat and black.
By the way, just to answer your question about EpiPens, Robert writes in from Australia. An EpiPen in Oz costs $38 with a prescription. If you just want one to buy over the counter, they cost $100 for some reason.
Wow. That's still cheaper than how much? That's
1/6 of what Heather Bresch was charging. She and her highfalutin never earned a graduate degree from my alma mater. Hey, Tracy, I'm going to roll, honey, but I do appreciate. I do appreciate. Oh, wait. 40 euros for one EpiPen in France, 75 euros for a two-pen pack. That courtesy of Flavio.
Thank you, Flavio.
75 euros, so that's about, what, 50 bucks? 60 bucks.
50 bucks.
Tracy, you have a lovely evening, and hopefully your challenge will be met.
I hope so. And I'm trying your best to feel better, Bob. I am praying for you.
Thank you, Tracy. I appreciate it.
Good night, my love.
Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver, with a challenge on the table. Shorty in L.A. says... tell Tracy those people are called hippo-Christians. Yeah, I like Taliban Christians, too. I'm funny that way. And Comrade Kumquat is just wrapping up a rally in Louisville, Kentucky, clapping and shaking his fist and giving thumbs up. Now he's clapping at a black curtain. I guess he's taking a victory lap around the stage. There's a whole bunch of pasty-faced, doughy, white committee members. You want to hear the screaming and hooting and hollering? Wait a minute. What's with the music? No, really. The goddess of irony is with us. I'm not doing that. I'm not playing that music. I'm really not playing that music. There's video of Trump walking around and being adored by the crowd. and we're being treated to a little bit of the old Ludwig van. God almighty! Can this get any more bizarre? That was the beginning. This is the replay. This is only interesting to the extent...
Thank you, everybody.
...that he got his ass handed to him by James Comey in the Congress today.
State of Kentucky and the beautiful city of Louisville.
Hello, Cleveland. I don't think I'm going to fool with it. That's just... like a moth to flame.
We're in the heartland of America, and there is no place I would rather be than here with you tonight.
Except for Mar-a-Lago. I got no patience for this. The payoff was in the Ode to Joy. Whoever was doing that, maybe it's from C-SPAN or something. They've got a taste for the ironic. No, Flavio, I was not playing A Clockwork Orange. That was the musical accompaniment before the start of the replay of Trump's appearance in Louisville, Kentucky. So I didn't mean to bring everybody down, but Tracy asked me about the health thing and the medical thing. And just tell you what it's like and where it is. And it ain't just me. It's a whole bunch of people all over this country in the same or a similar boat. It's more on Monday, though, and maybe I'll wrap up here in a minute or so. I don't know. Like I said, I got a little bit of relief earlier. Over the weekend, it wasn't terribly, but, you know, the pain backed off a little bit. Tonight's pretty rough. But being more on Monday, I had to share this with you. This comes from yesterday. There's a school in Indianapolis called Pleasant Run Elementary School. And a group of fourth graders there, five of them, participated in a robotics challenge at Plainfield High School. There's a happy ending to the story. They call themselves the Panther Bots. They are five black and Latino-Latina students. It's the problem with an inflected language. You've got the male and the masculine and the feminine endings. And they won their competition at Plainfield High School. And not only that, they won the citywide championship in Indianapolis. And they have qualified to go on. They also won multiple awards. They qualified to go on to the Indiana State Championships, where they kept winning. And now they're going to the VEX IQ Robotics World Championship in Louisville, Kentucky. Lisa Hopper is coach of the Pleasant Run Elementary School's Panther Bots team. She said, "Well, our scrappy little robotics team did it. It's been an exciting journey." naturally, this is one of those stories. When their competitors saw them in the parking lot at Plainfield High School, they began screaming at them, "Go back to Mexico." And the fourth graders, ignored the bigots and the racists and the xenophobes. And they didn't go back to Mexico. Instead, they're going to the World Championships in Louisville. So there's a little bit of inspiration there. More than a little bit. Thought you'd like that. Not the racism part, but the part where they go on and win. Oh, by the way, there's been a little bit of confirmation on the whole GCHQ embarrassment. We now know that Judge Andrew Napolitano over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda he's the one who spread the story about GCHQ tapping Marcus Aurelius's phones in Trump Tower at the behest of Barack Obama. Guess what? As our buddy the Angry Indian points out, it has now been confirmed that Andrew Napolitano got his talking point according to a story in the New York Times. He got it from Larry Johnson, who first floated the idea over on RT. Almost exactly a week after Trump twooped that his phones had been that TAPP. You know, and I got to thinking about it. You know why he spelled tap TAPP? Because in the Swiss cheese that is his brain, and it's a lot more whole than cheese. As he was sitting there twooping, because see, if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. The only place, I mean, he ain't Louis the 14th, okay? So nobody gets up and watches him take his morning dump. The only place where he can sneak away and do whatever he wants with his crappy old Samsung Galaxy S3 that's unsecured and hackable as hell is when he's on the toilet. So all of this madness, the really, really, really no kidding crazier than a shithouse rat stuff that he tweets. I would bet good money he tweets on the toilet. Twooping. Mm-hmm. And so he sees something on Fox News. He feels his belly rumble. He looks at Bannon and says, uh-oh, coffee kicked in. And heads off to the little president's room, where he twoops. So just in case you were wondering where that came from, now we know. How bad is it? This is how bad it is. It's not just it's not just Joe and Mika trying to distance themselves from the damage that they did in enabling the election of Donald Trump. It's Chris Wallace over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. On Sunday, Tracy mentioned the Sunday shows. Paul Ryan who said to Rich Lowry, and this is not a joke, the National Review had their Institute Ideas Summit Friday last, where Ryan and Rich Lowry engaged in a dialogue about what they're going to do to Medicaid. This is kind of telling. I mean, if you just want to get an idea for how much of an asshole somebody can be. This is a pretty good indication. Won't take me but a second here. Let's go to the audio, shall we? Here's the clip. You might want to get a hockey puck. Not mandatory, but you might want one.
You have been very clear for years, and we've seen compelling PowerPoint presentations about how the entitlements and entitlements growing out of control is driving the country into a ditch.
So we set the whole thing up, Rich Lowry does, with a false premise, because it's not true. And the whole time, Paul Ryan is sitting there smirking and grinning and chuckling like Eddie freaking Haskell. So that's the setup.
On the debt.
Yes.
And we have a president of the United States who basically seems pledged not to touch entitlements. Where does that leave us?
So,
before he answers, we have a president who seems committed not to touch entitlements. Operative word, seems. Because that was just another... His entire campaign was nothing but a transparent tissue of lies that were believable only by people who desired to be lied to. Because he's out there rah-rah and hootenannying to pass the try and care plan for all he's worth. That's why he was in Louisville. So the premise is, again, bullshit. But we're in territory that Paul Ryan loves to talk about. Maybe as much as, almost as much as he loves talking about those hot sex scenes in Atlas Shrugged. Let's go back.
So it's the healthcare entitlements are the big, big, big drivers of our debt. There are three: Obamacare, Medicaid, and Medicare. Two out of three are going through Congress right now. Two, so Medicaid, sending it back to the states, capping its growth rate. We've been dreaming of this since I've been around, since you and I were drinking at a keg, you know.
And did you hear him laugh? Since you and I were drinking at a keg. In other words, as Slate points out in its headline, Paul Ryan, I've been dreaming about kicking pores off Medicaid since I was a drunk frat boy. But pay attention also to his premise, because it's meaningful.
We've been dreaming of this.
Got to go back a little more.
Are going through Congress right now. Two, so Medicaid, sending it back to the states, capping its growth rate.
Capping its growth rate. Capping Medicaid's growth rate. Well, see, you can cap Medicaid's growth rate until hell won't hold you. But you cannot cap the illness rate. You cannot cap the need rate. All you can do is pretend that the people who need coverage don't exist and hope they die before anyone can find out what you've done. Cap the Medicaid growth rate. Man, that is straight out of Hannah Arendt. That is in plain English, not so plain maybe. That is the banality of evil. He can laugh about getting drunk around a keg and how he's been fantasizing about shitting on poor people since he was in college on our dime. And then try to sound all policy wonky when he says we're going to cut the Medicaid cap, the Medicaid growth rate, which is just a vicious way of saying we are going to ignore the weak, the weary, and the wounded. We are going to ignore them to death. Remember that scene from The Breakfast Club where Ally Sheedy finally starts talking and Emilio Estevez looks at her and says, "What do your parents do to you? Do they hit you?" And she says, "No, worse. They ignore me." Paul Ryan's not going to lose any sleep. They could stack the dead like cordwood outside his Janesville, Wisconsin home, and stack the excess out of whatever townhouse he lives in Washington, D.C. And he'd just go out the back door. And even if he went out the front, they'd still be invisible to him, because they can't do him, Paul Ryan, any good. They can't give him money. They can't expand his base of political power. They can't help him take away more from other Americans. And so, in fact, they are, in Paul Ryan's world, better off dead. That's a fact.
We've been dreaming of this since I've been around, since you and I were drinking at a keg. You know,
I was thinking about something else. He was thinking about reforming Medicaid.
I was. I've been thinking about this for a long time. We are on the...
What kind of fucking laugh is that? God, that's Renfield with a handful of fresh bugs to eat. That's what that laugh is.
He was thinking about reforming Medicaid.
I was. I've been thinking about this for a long time. We are on the cusp of doing something that we've long believed in.
And you know what it is that he's long believed in. That the people who do not contribute to his well-being, the people who do not give him more power, the people who do not keep him in office, the people who do not in the other states contribute to disgusting conservative ideology should just as well die. Now, Chris Wallace.
Office, I don't have to tell you, came out this week with a pretty dramatic forecast, and they said that 24 million fewer Americans will have health insurance in 10 years under your plan. You said that part of that is that this is what freedom looks like. Here you are.
This isn't a government mandate. This is not the government makes you buy what we say you should buy, and therefore the government thinks you're all going to buy it.
But, sir, is the major decrease in the number of people, according to the CBO, who will have health insurance, is it freedom or is it that some people will no longer be able to afford health insurance under your plan? I want to show a specific case that the CBO put up. Look at these numbers. In 10 years, the CBO said, a 64-year-old with an income of $26,500 will pay $1,700 out of pocket under Obamacare for health insurance. Under your plan, the CBO says, that same person will have to pay $14,600 because insurance companies can charge more and the tax credit that you're going to offer is smaller than the subsidy that Obamacare will offer. So what they're saying is this isn't freedom. This isn't people voluntarily deciding not to have health insurance. It's that your plan makes it unaffordable for people.
Okay, before we hear his response... how about a little bet? Anybody want to bet that the answer is the CBO gets everything wrong? Because that's been the talking point. I haven't seen this clip. Let's find out.
So there's three things I would say. Number one, what they basically say is people, Obamacare is not going to last. There's no way Obamacare could stick another 2 or 3 years, let alone 10 years.
That is a lie, just in case you're wondering.
And so they're comparing an Obamacare plan that's mythical, that won't exist in 10 years. Then they're saying, well, if people are going to buy what Obamacare is going to make them buy, then they won't be able to afford it. Here's the point. We believe that we do need to add some.
They didn't say that at all.
Additional assistance to people in those older cohorts. But the apples to oranges comparison that's happening here is we're not going to make people buy something that's so expensive that they can't afford, that the market's not going to offer. And so where I dispute that comparison...
Wait. What, Edith, huh? I got to try to get that again.
To make them buy... then they won't be able to afford it. Here's the point. We believe that we do need to add some additional assistance to people.
No.
They say as people, Obamacare is not going to last. There's no way Obamacare could stick another 2 or 3 years, let alone 10 years. And so they're comparing an Obamacare plan that's mythical, that won't exist in 10 years. Then they're saying, well, if people are going to buy what Obamacare is going to make them buy.
Okay, let's work with this. If people are going to buy what Obamacare is going to make them buy, because that's the premise.
Then they won't be able to afford it.
then they won't be able to afford it. That wasn't it at all. But he just gets to make up his own reality.
Here's the point. We believe that we do need to add some additional assistance to people in those older cohorts. But the apples to oranges comparison.
Ah, that's what, that's okay. Older cohorts, that's what, that's okay. Here at 8:51 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 20th day of March, 2017. I do not qualify, and nobody near my age, nobody under 60 qualifies as older cohort. We qualify as tough shit asshole. We're going to try to divide the country against you and get older Americans to get on board with this as long as we promise to fuck you, but not fuck them. Now, when you think about the number of older Americans who went out and voted for Trump, that may be a winning strategy. And now Ryan is out running around now that everybody has taken a good hard look at his try and care plan and has said, Jesus Christ. And the Freedom Caucus has said, wait, you ain't fucking enough people there, buddy. He's come back and says, well, you know, okay, we'll tweak this to make sure that that the olds are okay. Got that?
Harrison, that's happening here is we're not going to make people buy something that's so expensive that they can't afford, that the market's not going to offer. And so where I dispute that comparison is it suggests that we're going to have the same kinds of plans being offered in 10 years that Obamacare would otherwise offer.
But, sir, I mean, just to get to
it
two,
is collapsing.
If I may.
No, but just let me get back to that.
I just want to get to
the point you're making is that.
But I want to get to two points because
no,
under Obamacare.
The older person, Chris, I'm, just real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, let me just
you're
say, the older
go
person,
ahead.
The person in their 50s and 60s, the person in their 50s and 60s does have additional health care costs than, say, a person in their 20s and 30s. The tax credit adjusts for that, but you're right in saying, and we agree, we believe we should have even more assistance, and that's one of the things we're looking at for that person in their 50s and 60s, because they experience higher health care costs.
So you're going to change,
the, critical
you're
difference
change
here
the plan
is,
as it was written and the CBO analyzed it.
That is among the things we're looking at doing, yes. And the point I would say is we're going to let people buy what they want to buy. We're going to have more plans being offered, more choice and competition. And this is before Tom Price does anything to deregulate the marketplace, to bring more competition and lower prices.
Ooh-wee, I love me some deregulation. It always works so good. Remember Enron? Oh, glory. This is before Tom Price does anything to deregulate the marketplace. This is before Tom Price tells them that you can discriminate like hell against people for pre-existing conditions. This is before Tom Price says that he wants his hand in every vagina in America to make sure that that said vaginas are safe for the precious little fetuses. Yeah. And all those plans we're going to have. Hoo-wee, Uncle Jed! Where are they going to come from? And what are they going to be worth? At $1,700, that works out to a little over. It works out to almost $150 a month. On the other hand, $14,600 works out to a good sight better than $1,000 a month. Have I got the cipher in there? And at the end of the year, you're going to get a little old pissy tax credit, assuming, of course, that you qualify for it and you file your taxes the right way. Because I'm sure they're factoring that in, too. Well, I'll tell you what, they got some family values, don't they?
Which the CBO could not and did not analyze. So the CBO...
I told you. CBO got it wrong. I win.
looked at a little piece of the issue when we know that the Secretary of HHS will help bring market freedom and regulatory relief to the health insurance markets to dramatically lower the price of plans for those 50 and 60-year-olds. But even with that, we think that we should be offering even more assistance than what the bill currently does.
Okay.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
No, I understand then.
And I'm Chris Wallace, so I'm not going to press you and call you the bullshit artist that you really, 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 no kidding, are. Up over, down under in Australia? With the simplest of subject lines? Robert simply says, why? Why can so many countries around the world do what the USA cannot? Well, with my tongue firmly lodged in my cheek, Robert, I can tell you that's because around the world, the rest of the world just doesn't love, and you heard him use the phrase there, market freedom. It's no longer free market. It's now market freedom. It's freedom that's based upon the market, which means it's freedom for healthcare, health insurance executives. But it ain't got nothing to do with some sick-ass coal miner in West Virginia who voted for Trump because he wanted to make America great again.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Jack in Shreveport says, freedom? Isn't the government forcing people to do something under some possible penalty simply called a law, the making of which is Congress's job? This forcing thing is such BS. Hey, you know, the easiest way to disprove that whole thing is to say it would be if some wise ass would introduce a bill in the House of Representatives requiring every American, in order to protect our national security from the ISIS, to own a firearm. Because, of course, there's precedent for that in the earliest days of the Republic. And you know what? Paul Ryan would Vaseline that thing and shoot it through the Congress. It would squirt through before anybody knew what was passing. And of course that wouldn't be the government forcing people to buy something they didn't want, because everybody needs a gun. See how it works? Yes, of course. Question coming from Robert up near Morgantown. Would Ryan give freedom to his children, knowing they'd play video games and not do homework? His health care reform is simply a responsibility, not freedom. That's true. And you know what? I'm sure his kids have the absolute latest in gaming platforms, because they can be trusted to play gaming platforms and not treat it as a welfare hammock, because they're nice and white. So it's time to get out of here. We've got $170 to go in fundraising that'll roll over to tomorrow. We've got a $25 spring past the Morans challenge, courtesy of Tracy. That'll take us down to $120 to go. Thank you, everyone, for joining in this evening. I'll be back tomorrow. Don't worry. And in the meantime, hope you have a lovely evening and a wonderful Tuesday. Try to steer clear of the horrors. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. And thanks to all of you who spend your precious, finite time engaged in oh so many ways in this ongoing conversation. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.